be headed to the promised land of speaking the truth and finding our external liberty once we internally liberate ourselves.
But their children were saved, and their children's children. Generations were saved by one decision, one person. But changing the world can happen anywhere, and anyone can do it. So what starts here can indeed change the world. But the question is, what will the world look like after you change it?
Welcome to Public Access America.
Make a stand. I know I did. Thank you very much. And may God bless America. May God bless America. May God bless America.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another live stream and podcast episode from Public Access America. You can find our live streams on YouTube at Public Access America, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. You can find our podcast on Spotify and Apple, TuneIn, Google Play, the Stitcher Smart Radio app, Radio Public, Podcast Addict, some of my favorites. We're just waiting for Jeffrey, and this gives me a chance to do some house cleaning. We had a great episode on Inspirations Beyond Disabilities come out this Saturday. We did a show with Kimberly Ann, who has a device that we reviewed, and it's pretty exciting. It liberates blind people and other disabilities and allows them to function in normal everyday life without assistance. So that is awesome. I was also on a podcast, the Cooking Without Looking podcast, one of our cousin podcasts, and I talked salads. A lot of salad talk, but you know, that's what it is. Cooking Without Looking shows you tips and hacks on how to cook, everybody how to cook, but also people with visual impairments. So yeah, that is the exciting thing about Public Access America. We're all over the place. You can find us on Twitter at Public Access Pod, YouTube at Public Access America, Instagram at Public Access America. You can even find us on Facebook, although I hate Facebook, at Public Access America. Hey, Jeffrey, how you doing?
Man, I just log in and you're already talking about doo-doo?
Doo-doo. It's a theme. It's a theme ever since Inspirations Beyond Disabilities did the Apu episode.
Well, this episode's gone to shit already.
That's true. I was telling everybody that I don't like scripting the show, but I do have topics, and we do that. If you have a podcast, you know, you want to bullet points in there. And what I've been doing for the past 2 weeks is putting it in the live stream chat. So if you're a listener, you can go to the live stream while we're live streaming and kind of see the topics that we might swing around to get to.
Right.
Of course, honestly, Jeffrey, I don't mind sticking on one random wandering topic. You know what I mean? So that's what it is. I do want to say thank you for offering your second hour to your partner, Devi. They did an amazing job. And that episode is already in our top five of most popular episodes. So I want to, wanted to thank you and Debbie for that.
Yo, Debbie, the episode you did last week is already in the top five for public access.
For most popular, yeah.
For most popular. So
it is.
Oh, that's rad.
Right. I was so worried about the subject. And the weird thing is we're getting listens just as always from Indonesia, from Polynesia, from Japan, Australia, Great Britain, America. So it's a global topic. And I think it's some of the responses I've gotten were like, thank you. And wow, it's not just a problem in America, you know, and all these other things. And it's nice when we can come together. I told my friend, it's so much better to fight together for equality than it is to argue about politics. And I think it's catching on. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Well, what we've seen is the political ideology in argument run its course. People are just fucking tired of it.
Right.
It's like, you know, you're really starting to see a shift because you're seeing, I mean, even just this week, you're watching some of the GOP now push back against the rhetoric. You're watching some of the Democrats push back against the Democrat rhetoric.
Right.
I think people are just tired of these, you know, one box, two box lumps. And it's like, no, this has so much more to it than just what does my party think of it? And people are, some people are starting to wake up to it, but there's still a number of people out there that are still just you know, part of that group think that we're, you know, hopefully trying to get past.
Yeah. But I'm seeing podcasts start up based on critical thinking. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like I always say, talk to a politician about human events and they don't know how to talk about it. And that's what happens. They go into chaos because now their constituents are talking to them about human things that they're dealing with. And a politician, he's having a hard time keeping up translating that back into human because they don't know how to do that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And suddenly we get humans as representatives.
Suddenly, yeah.
Suddenly. And so there's like the Cory Bushes and Katie Porters that I always love. But there is something mm-hmm. major in the news, Jeffrey, and I want to get these three out of the way pretty quickly. And that is, of course, do we care that the French president is upset about a submarine deal?
Well, It's more than just a submarine deal, to
yes,
be perfectly honest.
Of course. That's where the conversation's going to go. But, you know, I watched a press conference this Wednesday, and every other question was, did Joe Biden apologize to the French president? Is the French president still mad? All the topics going on in America, and every other question was about this. So I had to ask. It must be important, but I'm not recognizing that part of the importance. I'm recognizing the geopolitical Indo-Asia Pacific region, you know, but I'm not understanding France's involvement in that.
So I would say, you know, this is where it gets a little bit fun and interesting too. So I think you've got two major issues along with a smattering of other smaller issues that are just kind of coming to a head.
Right.
So we'll start with the big one, the submarine deal. You know, what France was looking at building for Australia was conventional diesel powered submarines. You know, they're great short range around your area, but the problem that you're facing in terms of international shipping right now is beyond just Australia's waters. Mm-hmm. And Australia has recognized that, you know, with the threats that it's got from China regarding basically, you know, that's an entirely fun relationship to break down. Long story short, lots of coal from Australia goes to China. China has been putting a lot of pressure on Australia for talking points that are anti-China, or so Beijing sees. But
Beijing wants to monitor the world.
Yeah. And Australia is, you know, seeing that pressure and going, this is not okay. You're not going to threaten us with, you know, whatever, you know, military or, you know, diplomatic sanctions you think that you just get to hand out. So Australia, you know, this is kind of one of those things where the U.S. interest lies in this is very, very strategic as well.
Mm-hmm.
With the submarine deal, because, you know, the diesel systems only allow you to go so far. And they're great for coastal waters. It made sense that if Australia wanted to participate in securing shipping lanes around the world, that, you know, Australia be able to bolster its naval power.
Right.
And nuclear powered subs are the way to do it. You can do a lot more with a nuclear powered sub than you can with a conventional diesel electric sub. And on top of that, it allows, I would argue, it allows Australia to police its own area and in a way allows us to not have to do that.
Right. We get the intel from their patrols, but we don't have to actually do it ourselves.
And this is one of those steps where, you know, keeping the United States from being the world police means that other people's armies and navies and air forces have to step up and be able to do more themselves. No one country should be reliant on one single country to be able to uphold whatever ideals they think need to be upheld. And I think this discussion and ultimate change order essentially was not finessed very well. It was not discussed. I mean, at a minimum, it would have been like, you know, look, hey, you know, Australia wants nuclear powered subs so that way they can be able to more effectively patrol their areas.
Right.
But it was more than just a submarine deal. It was a security deal. And France feels like,
you know, they got completely left out on the discussion of, you know, what does securing, you know, the East Asian waters look like? Right. And France, you know, has some skin in that game too, because, you know, they also need right, you know, right to shipping lanes and be able to have access to those waters as well.
And be a part of the democratic, you know, side of NATO.
Right.
Like, they should be involved in the talks too. But I think to myself, there's so many leaks going on. If they were involved in the talks and a leak came out, that would really create a confrontation with China.
Well, this has already created a confrontation with China. It wouldn't have mattered if it was with or without France.
But creating it when we're prepared is different than creating it before the deal's done, because then China could just rail and propaganda it and cut it short. And we need those subs. China has the biggest naval force in the world right now. So protecting and monitoring those oceans is a big deal.
China doesn't have the biggest naval force in the world. That's still the property of the United States. And in fact, our naval force is still, was it bigger?
You think
Oh, absolutely. Okay. China only has one aircraft carrier. We have 11.
Right. That's what somebody had said. The boats they have are smaller, but they have more boats. We have bigger boats with more power, definitely.
And that's where it's, you know, if you calculate simply by numbers, yeah, sure, China might have a whole bunch of numbers, but I guarantee you they're counting everything from their merchant fleets to their one aircraft carrier. They don't have a navy like the United States does. They don't have a navy like the British do. They don't have a navy French do.
That's good to know, actually.
You know, when you're looking at up and comers, I mean, India is going to be one to watch. India is going to have a huge navy when they finally, when they really take to investing in their naval power. And I guarantee you they will to counter China.
That's why we're calling it the Indo-Pacific region now instead of the Asia-Pacific region, which I think is interesting. We're trying to, through words, give less power to China and more to India, because we have to give it somewhere.
Well,
we have to call it something.
Well, and you have other countries that are signaling, you know, massive issues with the way China's handling their claims to territorial waters. You've got Vietnam, who has chased off multiple shipping boats. I believe Singapore has chased off multiple. I believe Malaysia has chased off multiple.
Taiwan, the Philippines, they're all over.
Well, and Taiwan as a situation is an entirely different game compared to everything else.
Right.
So
it's like Ukraine and Russia, right? Taiwan and China.
Well, I would say that, like, you know, I would say probably more like the Crimean Peninsula and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Right. That would definitely make more sense. But the reality is that the U.S. had a major misstep, I would say, in that, you know, if you want to not be the world's police, you should have included your ally in the conversation of what does a security pact look like,
right?
You know, but here we also have, I believe, a major exercise coming up between India, South Korea, Japan, and us as well.
Nice.
So, you know, India is finally starting to get into this game. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah. And how do you feel, just before we move on, how do you feel about the transfer of technologies like this?
Well, this is a negotiated and open transfer. You know, this is one of those things where it's like, you know, Australia is going to be paying us for the technology. Australia is going to be building their own systems to maintain that technology. We're obviously going to have a part in this. It's not forced technology transfer. I think it's a strategic technology transfer between allies. And that, to me, is absolutely fine. I don't have any issues with that. I think my issue would be is if we suddenly decided to nuclear arm Australia, which they don't want. So I personally am anti-nuclear armament. I think
me too.
I think the idea of wanting to wipe out the planet because you don't like the other guy is complete ass.
Right.
It's like, well, if I don't get to have it my way, fuck it, none of you will. No, that's insane. Pretty much, that's insane. Yeah. That is the fucking ravings of a madman, is what that is.
That's a Mission Impossible movie. I just watched it last night.
It's
Fallout.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane to just be like, fuck it, we're going to glass the planet. If Mikhail Gorbachev can lead the Soviet Union and become anti-nuclear proliferation, I have every confidence to believe that, you know, there were some people that saw the light at the end of the tunnel, and that light looked more like a nuclear flash, and they're like, we got to fix this shit.
Right. I would much rather see our nuclear capabilities go into energy instead of warheads. You know what Absolutely. I mean? I'd rather defund the military in its advancements in nuclear and kind of hand that out to like energy.
I honestly, here's what I could see. You know, one of the things that, you know, when you look at militarily, what do you have to do to ensure yourselves? Energy is a critical infrastructure. I could see strategic military power plants that keep, you know, strategic points of the nation running. Absolutely.
That's interesting. I never thought of that.
You know, that's one of those things where, you know, you have to figure out what your risks are and you have to offset your risks. Our risk right now is that we've got three main electrical grids, east, west, and Texas. Well,
right.
Texas does its own thing, as we're well aware of.
I hope so.
And
honestly, I hope
Well, I would hope so if they did it well, but they don't. It's one thing when you...
No, I don't want them to do it well. Honestly, here's what I see. I see the abortion thing happening and then Democrats getting their way and then Texas filing to secede. And then what I see is Texas versus the United States, where we then take over Texas and then distribute it in portions to the states surrounding. Yeah,
that wouldn't happen. As much as we like to think about like all these what if scenarios, that won't happen. Mm-hmm. Texas, nobody wants to learn that lesson again.
No, they're batshit crazy. But if you follow that timeline of where they're going, that's what would happen. If they decided to secede, we would just take them over because they're no longer the United States. And I like this idea a lot.
I mean, it would certainly be interesting, that's for sure.
Because then, honestly, we could include Puerto Rico finally as a state and nobody would be butthurt because we wouldn't need to change the flag.
That's,
you know what I mean?
That's one of those things that I also don't get why Puerto Rico is not a state at this point, despite the fact that they keep voting for statehood.
Right. And Washington, D.C., right? Those are the two. So there's two, but we don't want to change the flag. So I don't know. 52 stars might look funny. We could do it, though. So what do you think about... Haitian immigrants?
That's a weird way to ask that question.
I don't want to start like where everybody else is. You know what I mean? I don't want to start at present day and then back up because there was a horror and now we're all focused on that horror and trying to create resolutions based on that. It's been broken before that. And I'd like to start with the fact that Haitians are coming here, and which Haitians are coming here, and why are they coming here, and how do we feel about that? I don't want to go with we don't like immigrants. I want to go, hey, guess what? The Haitian people had an earthquake, and then their president was assassinated. Then they had another earthquake. Then they had tsunamis. Then they had tidal waves, and then they fled to other countries. And then Biden got elected, and they were like, ooh, no more Trump. So they came here. But they came here from Chile and Honduras and Venezuela and Brazil. And I don't think people understand what's going on. I think they just see a caravan and they're either like, yeah, save them, or, oh no, we hate them. And we got to get past that, because in that group is designations that laws decide what to do, right? And so we can't say have a heart when the laws are on the books, right?
That's the tough part is that, you know, when you look at like what recent tragedy looks like on the Haitian island, it's really
Haiti. I couldn't think of the country name Haiti.
when you think about what that looks like, you know, it's been a tragedy ongoing for over a decade now. It's not like this, you know, there was an earthquake and an assassination and now we're here, you know, a month later. Mm-hmm. No, this has been a decade of ongoing hardships and tragedy. And constant legal limbo of, you know, while also not having anybody in the world step up to try and help Haiti recover.
Nonprofits are.
You know, this goes back to that whole, like, you know, if you can only do so much with a nonprofit, you know, because, well, we apparently don't want to allow nonprofits to get as much funds as possible.
Right.
You're always going to be dealing in limited capacities, very limited capacities. Yeah. So, you know, that's really unfortunate because, you know, they barely had time to rebuild anything from 2010.
Right.
And I shouldn't say barely had time, barely had resources. And now they're back at it again. And that's
time plus resource equals development though, right?
Yeah.
Like you can't separate those two.
True, but if you don't have resources, it don't matter how much time you have.
That's what I'm saying. If you have no resources, it'll take 100 years and then, you know, whatever. It's more based on that. I don't know what they could do. I've never been to Haiti. It's devastating, and I want to hug them all and take care of them all. That's not what the Trump administration created laws to do, right? No. And like how Republicans are like, we don't like these laws, so we're just going to overtake the government. I feel like Democrats are like, we don't like these laws, so we're gonna take over the border. You can't do that. You can't suspend laws to use your heart, you know, and. So it's tough for the Biden administration to like follow those laws and still be empathetic to the situation.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, once again, the question is stated, why is it that we're in this situation? Especially when it looks like Biden is going to have to reinstitute, you know, remain in Mexico policies, which is really fucked, you know, but once again, we have laws, and for better or worse, these laws exist, and we're being forced to use them.
Yeah, until Congress changes them, that's what we have to do.
Yep.
And even the people, even the officers in Mexico, the mayors, the governors, the president, they're saying, Haitians, come here, come into Mexico, get your work permits, like, be here, and come more central and southern, like, 8,000 people a day are streaming into Mexico. So that's an issue for them too, right? Mm-hmm. And there isn't an international community that, like with the Afghanistan or Syrian refugees, where we're trying to take these people into, there's no European country saying, okay, we'll help you with this Haitian thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough. And then all of these countries, Colombia, Brazil, Honduras, where these people fled, they were being persecuted there. They were being racially discriminated against there. And the U.S. had taken and removed all the aid that we were providing to the central, what is it called? Mesozoic region, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there is no aid there. And I feel like when Kamala Harris is saying, don't come, it's not safe here, what she means is you don't have a job there, but you're safe, and we're going to send aid there. If you stay there, the aid will get to you. But if you come to our border, we can't help you. You know what I mean? Just, yeah, in the way that we want to. But that's because of the laws that are on the books.
Right.
You know? So I think we need to give... Some guy was like, where's Kamala Harris? And I had to tell him, she's in South Korea. Her staff is getting their brains scrambled. You can't communicate from South Korea here like you can here to here. And then the second she came back, she was like, this is unacceptable. I was like, there she is. I mean, government moves slower than people's hearts do.
Oh, absolutely. You know what I mean? And especially when you can be flooded with images, you know, like what we saw out of Texas this week. Like, good Lord, that looks terrible.
But those are officers that maybe were more sympathetic to the Trump policies. Like, you can't just get rid of these people and put in saints. You have to deal with the officers you have. And if some of them are low-grade recruitments that fail to keep their emotions in check, we don't want those people. But we can't just get rid of them until we know who they are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It's a very complex topic, unfortunately. And, you know, the reality is that, you know, more needed to be done to step up getting Haiti back on its feet. And after 10 years, there was another earthquake. And when you think about it, that's 10 years of people growing up in other countries, not being able to go back home where they wanted to go, but it hasn't been safe to go back home.
Right.
Like, that's just wild.
And now, without a president, they have no government to help the situation. They're governmentless. They're just an island full of people that are scrambling to get help and off. And these are women and children. I always think to myself, are you really scared of these immigrants? Like, I don't understand why there's...
I know exactly why. And that's because you've got a group of people who seriously believe in replacement theory. And it's absolutely insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I was paying attention to Brexit. I watched a documentary on Brexit. And that was because the European Union was saying wherever immigrants go, we're going to let them go. We have a free and open policy on that. Mm-hmm. And I love that. But England was upset that they were getting immigrants. And even though their unemployment lowered during that time and people were working, the English people did not like the immigrants there because they were taking their jobs. Even though, like here, they weren't taking their jobs. In a way, they were entering industries. That meant other people needed to step up. It didn't mean that the immigrants were the problem. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same way here. People migrate. When the world is safe, they stay where they are. And the world isn't safe. But that's not an us thing. It's an everybody thing. Your country needs to be, Syria needs to be safe. Afghanistan needs to be safe. And they need to do that themselves. The people need to do that. Mm-hmm. They need to leave. You know, if it's not safe, they need to leave.
Right.
That's the truth.
Well, and like you said, you know, with UK and the fact that they were getting as many immigrants as they were, you know, it was one of those things where, like, England saw the benefit of it. And post-Brexit, you've now seen what that looks like. They've got crops rotting in the field. They've got labor shortages still. Massive labor shortages.
We do, too.
So these weird isolationist policies, anti-immigrant policies, are literally costing productivity and GDP, you know, something that, you know, the more conservative types claim to love, yet they consistently pass policies that really inhibit your ability to expand that. So, which is it? Do you love, it's like when you say you love capitalism, and you're going to do everything to make sure that the free market flows, but somehow you're going to ban immigrants and thus create a strain on your capitalist society because you can't get the work done that you need. I think I'm following this, and it looks like shit.
It does. It looks like racism.
Oh, absolutely.
With extra steps. You know what I mean? It's slavery with extra steps.
It's racism, but now it's costing you a shit ton of money. On top of it costing you a shit ton of money for being fucking assholes.
Right.
So,
and you know, this guy on Instagram I was talking about, he was more on the right. And what I told him was the border's stupid. We need infrastructure there to house, feed, and educate and transfer these people from one state to another, you know? Mm-hmm. And he was like, maybe that is the answer. And I was like, of course it's the answer, you know, but we have that conversation all the time and I wasn't trying to go there, but other people can see that a southern wall border is just stupid. It's just stupid when you could put infrastructure in there to stop people at that point with education or military or agricultural. You could put these people into job programs and move them where they need to be because you know how many are there, you know who they are, and you know how trained they are. But we don't do all that. We leave these people sitting on the border until we bring them all in, and then we don't know what they do. So we call them a waste of life. We call them criminals, but they're not. Mm-hmm. They know what they know. They have trades. They have abilities. You know, they have an education in a certain way, and we need to benefit from that stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing is like, you knowing how many position shortages there are out there in the world currently, in the United States currently, like the idea of holding the door shut while complaining about how you don't have enough help is just absolutely ass backwards. you know, and then when they do come in to help, having people talk about how they're just a drain on your benefits, they can't get benefits. They're not citizens.
Right.
It's wild to think that. And which is really awful in other ways, because it's like, you know, we're sitting there talking about all the benefits that they don't get, but there are certain things that you absolutely need, and healthcare is one of those things. So what the hell?
You know what is a drain? Is sick people in your country. And you know what's funny about the Brexit thing? One of the compromises was, we're not going to give immigrants benefits for 7 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know? And it was like, that's the compromise? You want sick, dying people drawing on your resources when you could have people surviving? I don't know. It's just that none of it makes sense to me that way.
It's really funny because, like, all of these potential resources that are available are just they're being kept unavailable for no better reason than, but you're not from here,
right? For propaganda.
And the idea is that they couldn't supply anything of use to any other industry. I mean, that's just absolutely insane.
Oh yeah, Texas farmers, California farmers, they're all crying about this, but they're also Republican and they need the talking point. Yeah. You know what I mean? Their politicians need the immigrant fervor to continue, but the farmers, they need the immigrant workers.
It's like that meme where somebody's bicycling and then they stick a branch in the spoke of their bicycle and then blame it on somebody else. It's like your own policy is what's keeping you from getting help. I mean, if that isn't clear to you by now, I don't know how else to tell you that you're the reason you are suffering.
That I suffer from my politics, the new Republican agenda. You know
Sounds
what I mean?
About right.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're not going to change people's minds about migration, although I really wish I could. It's one of the things that I hate. So how do you feel about I thought this was going to be a much bigger conversation than it is, but Arizona finished their audit and you're the numbers guy. So I have a different take on it. So I'd like to hear just like what happened.
So
did you research it all? Did you care? Did you pay attention?
So full disclosure, I am friends with the former Maricopa County recorder, Adrian Fontes. So
I like him actually.
Yeah. So full disclosure, just so that way people know, Adrian and I know each other.
Tell him thank you for
me. Oh, I've told him thanks multiple times.
Right?
He's running for Secretary of State down in Arizona. So I got to put that out there. I do know him. He's a fantastic guy, Marine vet. So dude is solid. You know, when he ran his Maricopa County recorder platform, he ran as a Democrat to counter the Republicans, but he said very clearly, it's like, I don't feel that being a recorder should be a partisan office. The idea is that you have to make sure you have voting systems in place, so that way everybody can vote regardless of who they're voting for, period, end of story.
Right.
And, you know, everybody that can vote should vote. And that's what he did. He wanted to make sure that people that could vote had the access to do it.
And nobody had his job more scrutinized than this man, right?
Right. And the funny thing is, the 2016 election was such a shit show, or I think it was 2014, was such a shit show that he ran for election in 2016 because it was so bad. It was so bad. There was like no access to the polls whatsoever, and it pissed him off so bad. They'd closed a whole bunch of polling stations. He was literally so pissed off by it that he ran for office and got elected. So, flash forward to the Maricopa County election of 2020. And this idea that Arizona could not have voted for anybody but Trump is just proliferated amongst, you know, the right-leaning states and counties that there's absolutely no way. And as we saw in California, the playbook has become, if I don't win, it's fraud. Well,
but you have to admit, seeing Arizona on Fox News go to Biden, there wasn't a second of really? Like we all thought really. Some people thought really longer and for more money. you know?
Well, and the answer was, is that, you know, when you're sipping your own Kool-Aid, you can't think that another flavor of Kool-Aid could be any better.
Right.
And that's the reality is that it's not that Biden won because the Kool-Aid was better. It was because the Kool-Aid they were drinking was tainted and they were tired of it.
And they noticed. They noticed.
Absolutely. And that's the thing is that Adrian, you know, he made sure that access to the polls was available, that, you know, everything mm-hmm. was, you know, followed quite well, to the point where
right.
the GOP recorder that is in office right now, while he hasn't exactly gone to bat for Adrian, he's made it clear that there is nothing that they have seen found anything that would lead into question the integrity of the election. And in fact, so much so that right. he ended up writing a very scathing letter to the people in the party saying, this is enough. There was nothing there.
Right.
Dude lost. And when they, and he called out the fact that hiring this group of auditors who had never audited an election before.
Right.
Like, think about that. That would be, you know, could you imagine, you know, think back to Enron. And if you had brought in an independent financial auditor who had never fucking audited finances before, like right. that's insane. That is absolutely insane. Like, what the hell? But people have gotten themselves entrenched in this idea that, oh, well, if they know what they're doing, then they're part of the system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, what?
Right.
Like you think that because somebody knows what they're doing, they're now part of this deep state dude, whatever you're smoking or chewing, like you got something bad because woof.
Right. Well, it's diminishing science and information and knowledge, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean? Like you complain about a voting system that you read about on Wikipedia. You know what I mean? Like
right.
your base information level on a something so complex as voting, you don't get it. You don't get it. There's federal laws, there's state laws, there's county laws, there's poll specific laws, you know, and mm-hmm. to know all of that stuff, it's just so, how do you think the audit went? I mean, there was people that were like fact checking it in real time. And I wish I could put those two together somehow. I can't.
Well, so. I mean, the thing about the audit itself is that I think it was a great way for the GOP to spend $5.7 million mm-hmm. and then blame Biden and blame the Democrats for them spending money that they didn't need to spend.
Right.
I think that's what it is. I think it's a great political tool to bitch about the fact that they just spent a whole bunch of taxpayers' money doing something that was completely unnecessary. Now, full disclosure, I think that, you know, audits are a great thing. And Maricopa County has audits in place. And
they did three before this one.
Yes. And so it's, you know, I'm sure Biden appreciates the fact that he won Maricopa County a fourth time. But
right.
the problem is that...
By more, right?
The problem is that, you know, at some point you have to, it's the law of diminishing returns. You put forth a lot of initial effort, you get a lot of return. You put forth more effort, you get less return. You put forth mm-hmm. more effort, you get less return. You put forth more effort, you get less return.
Right.
Well, after four times of putting in effort, and each time it's like, he lost. Well, he lost by mm-hmm. more. He lost by more. Now he lost by more again. Like, at some point, you have to decide what you're going to take this stupid fucking idea off life support, because it isn't working. And the reason it isn't working is because this idea that this group of people seems to hold near and dear to their heart is a fucking lie. And it isn't true, no matter how many times you want to believe that it's true.
Right.
And, you know, they're sitting down and saying, oh, well, they had no way of counting the legal votes. Yeah, they did. They did the audit. Mm-hmm. That's how you count legal votes.
Right.
And they counted the quote unquote legal votes. And legally, Biden won by even more now.
They say, right? Well, I mean, yeah. if we can't trust them to either way, then we can't really trust their count.
Which is insane because, you know, like I said, this is the same group of people bitching about the fact that Biden won in mail-in mm-hmm. voting. But in other Republican-held states that had mail-in voting, those systems aren't in question at all. And it's right. not because, you know, places like Texas and Alabama have much better voting laws regarding mail-in ballots. Right. The laws are actually pretty much the same. It's just that I got the outcome I wanted, therefore it obviously wasn't fraud. And if your question is centered solely around outcome in terms of the scientific process, that would be like if I come up with a hypothesis and I'm certain that that's what the answer is, and then I don't get the answer, and then I have to go, nope, it's definitely science's fault that I didn't get my answer.
Right.
No, that's not how this works. You can map it, you can retest it, you can retest it, you can retest it. And when you keep getting the same answer,
mm-hmm.
that's because the process and the method work.
Yeah.
Now, it's not to say that at some point you couldn't potentially find some mechanism, some confounding variable that is throwing everything off. But the reality is that at some point you have to accept that, you know, in terms of returns that you're getting, what you're seeing is the truth.
Yeah,
it is the truth for what exists in that moment. And you can order all sorts of recounts. You could literally have every American recount the election. But the mm-hmm. idea that, you know, the funny part is this idea that somehow humans are better at counting than machines are, when humans are by far more are more full of bias than a machine is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at some point you have to say enough's enough. We have tested, retested, retested, and retested, and the result is holding.
But now, do you think this is just a performance for one? Do you think this is subverting elections, like diminishing them, saying to people that they don't count, they don't work? Or do you think this is an actual attempt to destroy machines and like destroy the infrastructure of voting so it's unprepared in the future? I'm curious as to all of it. Yeah.
It's performance art for one lonely guy in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It's about destroying systems so that way people can implement what they think are more rigorous and legal systems, which right. I guarantee you they're not.
Because that way when they go, look, see, it doesn't work because they destroyed everything. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's, you know, it's one of those things where if your idea is to make it next to impossible for a group of people to vote, mm-hmm. and then you manage to make that happen, and come the next election, your party wins because of those very same mechanisms. You know, it's not that what you did was actually better and more secure. It's that what you did was illegal by every stretch of the imagination under federal voting laws.
Right.
So, like, look, you know, I don't know of any person who thinks we should have absolutely no oversight or security regarding elections. I don't know of anybody who thinks that.
Right.
I think I know plenty of people who are like, hey, look, you know, we need to figure out what the answer is to make it more accessible to everybody. And we need to figure out what that answer is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, too, the answer that we consistently see is people making it more difficult for certain groups of people to vote.
Yeah.
Because that vote is more unpredictable. And if, you know, Republicans or Democrats can't rely on that vote, they want to make sure that it's not going to happen.
I think it's trying to replace the individual American atop the system. It's trying to say, nope, we can't trust Americans to do what's best for them. So we're going to take that power away and we're going to usurp them at the top of the democracy, you know, and it's a troubling thing.
Absolutely.
Somebody asked me, why are they starting an audit in Texas that Trump won? And my answer was simple. He needs a win. He already knew he was going to do this, but he was going to do Texas later when it was like, you know, he had all of them going. And that's the thing. Mm-hmm. He needs a win. He's lost. Like, what is he up to? Like 88 losses now?
Oh, more than that.
He's the biggest loser in chief that we've ever had. And I think less and less people are following him, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, this is the easy layup. Let's audit a place where Trump won, have a big celebration that Trump won the place that we know Trump won.
Right. For performance. Somebody in Texas, one of the legislators, was like, what's sad is that a man in Florida is now running Texas, you mm-hmm. know?
Absolutely. And that's just it, it's absolutely insane. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not the kind of person who's going to say that audits aren't necessary, because audits are great.
They happen all the time, though. They're happening all the time. Even yeah. if there's no question about it, they still mm-hmm. do audits.
Absolutely. You have to make sure that the system is performing as it should. You have to make mm-hmm. sure that if there are people out there doing things illegally, that, you know, the system is going to be able to catch them. You yeah. have to make sure that all of these systems are functioning to the highest degree of accuracy that is mm-hmm. absolutely possible. If you think for a second that humans are 100% accurate and machines are anything less, you kind of missed it. If you mm-hmm. think, you know, machines are 100% accurate, you've also missed it. But you can strive to get as close to it as you can. And the way that you do that is through auditing your processes, your procedures, and yeah. ultimately the vote. And time again, you know, we keep seeing that the systems that we have in place are pretty accurate, pretty safe. And yeah. that, you know, if anything, we've caught more voter fraud because of people trying to vote extra for Donald Trump.
Sadly, but it happens. I mean, that stuff is going to happen on an individual level, but there's not Absolutely. Thousands of them. There's not thousands. And that's why it takes a week or two to call an election, is because there's audits going on during that time. There's 2 weeks of checking the work, you know. Nobody wants to put out bad numbers and then get caught doing that.
Well, that's the thing, is it's not even just that. It's that, you know, yeah, sure, the exit polling helps, you know, news stations call the election. Sure, mm-hmm. that makes sense. But even before we know that the results are final, I mean, really, we know when the results get finalized. That's when they certify the election. And that right. happens at the beginning of January. And funny enough, there was a bunch of people who didn't like the answer, and they tried to stop that.
That's an interesting one, yeah. That's an interesting one.
During that time period, from the election to the certification, you have two months of cities, counties, mm-hmm. states checking all of their work to make sure, you know, is this really what happened? Did this yeah. person actually win? Did we see any mass voter fraud? Did we see system failures? Did we somehow forget a block, which that actually happened, I think, in Georgia, where there was like something like 1,000 votes or something like that didn't get right. counted. And then they found those votes. It wasn't even that they were found. It's that they just didn't get tallied for whatever reason in the machine. They were there and they were good. And, you know, Biden still won.
That's funny.
And the person who didn't check their work got fired for it.
Of course.
You know,
But here's the propaganda I have a problem with, and I was talking to my friend about it, and he says 34% to 40% of the country doesn't believe Biden's president. And I said, no. He said, well, it's 70% of the Republicans. And I said, yeah, 70% of 22% don't believe it, right? And I think people are making the boogeyman bigger than it is. There is 80 million. Okay, 320 million people in this country, that's a quarter, that's 25%. 80 million is 25%. And since there's 350 million people in the country, it's actually less than 25%. It's 22% that voted for Donald Trump, right? There's mm-hmm. 33% that voted for Democrats. And there's a whole bunch of people that didn't vote at all. So mm-hmm. That's the number that's missing. People think it's 50-50 Republican-Democrat when it isn't. It's 22, 32 and the rest is independent or non-voting.
Right.
And so that boogeyman that you're thinking about, when they say 20 million Republicans believe they should take up arms and reinstall Donald Trump, 20 million is not 40% of the population. And we need people to understand that one.
Oh, absolutely. Because
there's 45 million Black people in this country. There's 49 million disabled people in this country. And our news 24 hours a day panders to 20 million.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem. It's a problem.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, and like you said, it's, you know, when you look at the voting block, we, you know, we got about half of the population to vote in 2020.
Right. Which was huge. It's our biggest numbers ever. Half. And you got to think 60 million are children, right? So It's, you can dwindle it down that way, but it is about 120 million that didn't vote at all.
I want to say it was something like we got like 61% of all eligible voters to vote,
right?
Something like that. Right. So, you know, it's like you said, in the population, yeah, it's about 22% of a population. And even then, you know, what's that number based off of? You know, is it Democrat? Is it a Democratic polling place, polling group that's like calling down to, the most deepest red of an area and asking people,
I'm just going off the vote, like the vote. That, and that's even more like. Trump didn't get 86 million. He got 76 million. You know, Biden got 86 million.
Right. And even then, you know, you've got a bunch of Republicans who don't believe this stuff either. You know, is there right. it's like, our dude lost. It sucks. Well, we'll try and figure it out next time. But then you have, you know, so it's not even that 22% of the population. It's a subset of that who seriously believe that. Which was an interesting point, that part of being Republican is being, you know, is admitting that Donald Trump won the 2020 election and that it was rigged against him. And it's like, wait, so that's your identity now? What? That doesn't make any fucking sense.
No, suffer for my politics. And they don't know who you are. That's what I'm saying, Ron, that voted for Trump. He doesn't know you.
He probably doesn't even actually care.
Right. I just don't understand. Well, if the Republican voter stops donating, Trump will care. You know, people don't understand. So this is what I figured out. Donald Trump used to put his name on buildings that he didn't build. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Trump. Now he's putting his name on political endorsements for the same thing. He gets 25% of the money raised by that candidate if he endorses that candidate. So all he's trying to do is endorse candidates that'll give him money.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't change. He just changed the genre in which he was trying to earn money. Used to be in real estate, putting his name on buildings. Now it's politicians putting his name on them. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's still a scam.
Absolutely.
Oh, it sucks. Thanks for being here, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Yay! Thank you for listening to Public Access America. Come back next Thursday for the conversation we're about to have, which is going to be unique.
To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you.
This is our moment. This is our time.
To those who seek peace and security, we support you.
Yes, we can.
And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright, tonight we prove once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbow. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life.
Ask. Not.
Yes, we can.
What your country can do for you.
I have a dream.
Ask what you can do for your country.
My poor little children.
Yes, we can.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression.
In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing to nobody except yourself.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
That's how winning is done.
Welcome
to Public Access America.
Yes, we can.
Sunday live streams on YouTube.
I wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad.
On Twitter.
Prove what?
Apple Podcasts. Stitcher Smart Radio, Public, and Spotify.
Yes, we can.
Public Access America. History in the making. Making history in the making.